Our next speaker is Betsy Corkland, and Betsy is a certified advanced practice registered nurse. She's been practicing in a variety of parts of nephrology for over 7 years, and she's a speaker for American Regent and also for Amgen, and her emphasis is on anemia management.
Dr. Reed has clearly shown you anemia is very, and iron deficiency is significant in the CKD population. IV iron is more efficacious than the oral iron, and our outcomes for the patients, which is what's most important, are better when they're seen in the CKD clinic and their anemia is managed properly. And while we would love to stand here and look at those outcome slides and be like, oh yeah, it was easy, we're good, y'all have fun, we can't do that because it was hard, and it's everything in nephrology. Medicine in general, you're always going to face obstacles and it's always going to be difficult. And so what I hope to do is talk to you about some of those obstacles and break them down, tell you some things that we learned, then also tell you some obstacles that are continuing to be faced, that you'll face, and that will continue and always will be a challenge. But before I get started, I want to ask a few questions just so we kind of have an idea of exactly who I'm talking to. By show of hands, how many of you are primarily hemodialysis nurses? All right, good job, y'all work hard. Been there. How many are primarily peritoneal dialysis nurses? All right, y'all work hard too. I didn't realize that until I started working with some of the peritoneal dialysis patients as a nurse practitioner. How many of you do not work in hemodialysis or peritoneal dialysis, but you work in the pre-dialysis clinic with a nephrologist?
One, two, three, four.
All right, good. Got a few. Well, for the majority of you who are hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis and do not work with that pre-dialysis population, you might be saying, well, what does this really have to do with me? I'm not going to be doing this. Well, we're going to talk about that some, and he's already addressed that a little bit, of how it affects your patient when you see them and what it means when they walk in the door to you. The other thing about that is our office, I worked on the hemodialysis floor before I went back to school to become a nurse practitioner. The RN in our office was a tech on the hemodialysis floor, then went to nursing school, was a nurse in hemodialysis, and now she's the RN in our office. We had to get her some help when we started getting all this other work. She has a tech who worked a very, very long time on the hemodialysis floor. So while I don't want any dialysis managers throwing anything at me because it sounds like I'm trying to steal your workers, we all know there's crossover and we all make changes in our careers from time to time. And so nothing better in the pre-dialysis clinic than an experienced dialysis nurse or tech to help us work with the patient. So that's another side of why it can be important to you. Some of the obstacles, we're going to talk about timely referral. Dr. Reed touched on that a little bit, of the non-dialysis dependent CKD patient. We're going to talk about finding the time in your daily practice. I'm sure if I asked each of you, okay, I need you to do one more hour's worth of work in the time you're already doing, you would all laugh in my face. There's never enough time to do what we're doing, so how did we change our focus and make the time for that? We're going to talk about some real-world obstacles, just a few little nuts and bolts of day-in, day-out treatment with iron therapy. And then the availability of the erythropoietin and now the availability of the IV iron agents in the CKD clinic. To back up first on the timely referral, while our focus and the focus in nephrology is really shifting to the CKD clinic, you know, through the years, the main focus has been on that hemodialysis, peritoneal dialysis. The shift is to look at the CKD clinic, pre-dialysis population, and get them ready. We realized that we had come to that conclusion, that we were ready to make that shift, but then all of a sudden we were like, wait a minute, the family practice physicians, primary care physicians, and nurse practitioners, internists, they haven't made that shift yet. We still were not getting the patients in time to make a difference. And as he said, you have to have the patients to actually treat the anemia and the iron deficiency and make a difference. So we decided we need to do something about that. Well, we looked to say, why are we not getting the patients? What's the problem? What's the deal? And this was a study published in Dialysis and Transplantation, and they did a survey, and they asked the primary care physicians why they were not sending patients to nephrology. 50% of them, it was simply a lack of communication with a nephrologist. Docs weren't talking. 40% feared being negatively evaluated by a nephrologist. You know, there's not a one of us who wants to do our best and do what we can for a patient, and then the patient go to somebody else And the other person say, well, why weren't you doing this, this, and this? They didn't want to look bad. And we can all understand that. 90% though, were just unfamiliar with the guidelines. And 90% just said, you know, well, I don't know when you want to see them. I don't know what I'm supposed to look at specifically to send them to you. In addition to that, another survey was done to ask the primary care physicians, what are you most comfortable with? When you're treating a pre-dialysis patient, what do you feel comfortable with? And they were to rate it on a scale of 0 to 5, 0 being their lowest comfort level and 5 being their highest. And as you see, hypertension control, they were very comfortable with. They knew that. That was what they do day in, day out. They were very comfortable with maximizing the ACE inhibitor dose. But as you come down to some of the other, treating anemia is very low. It's right there, just barely above renal transplant. So they didn't know anything about anemia treatment. So what we did is we decided to get out there and tell them that they had something that we knew about. And what this is, it shows that over a very short period of time, we decided to go communicate with the interns. It was a novel idea, but we're like, we're going to go talk to them and just let them know what we're here for. And we did lunch presentations and dinner presentations. We gave them a good steak and asked them to listen to us for a little while. And we just told them, you know, and Dr. Reed stood up in front of them and very humbly, with the physicians he's worked with for years, said, hey guys, it's different now. Before, I told you to send me the patient when the patient was vomiting or they couldn't breathe. You know, things are different now. I have help and we have new treatment and we can do a better job, so let's do it. We told them the guidelines as far as calculating the GFR from the creatinine. We told them what we could do in treating anemia management, how building the relationship and the trust with the patient, we were able to get access placed. They were able to start dialysis without walking into the hospital. And as you can see by the stars indicate presentation. Our monthly average referrals tripled after only 4 presentations. You just tell somebody what they need to do, and most people are going to do it. They just need to know. So that's when it got interesting, because that's when we had a significant impact on that focus change that we were wanting to make. In 2001, there was like one day a week that we had clinic for the pre-dialysis patient. We had to increase that to 3 days a week. And that's a pretty big change when you think about day in, day out, how you're going to make the schedule work and fit. So where did we find the time? Well, initially, we didn't. Initially, the physicians were overloaded. We were pulling them in 500 different directions. Schedule was tight. It was frustrating. And so early on, the nurse practitioner was added to help and stabilize the CKD clinic for the follow-ups, and also to help some with the time constraints and the hemo rounding and that kind of thing to relieve some time. But what we found, as Dr. Reed talked about, was that once we started getting the referrals, once we started seeing the patients early, we had less hospitalizations. There were fewer of those midnight calls with the creatinine of 11 and hemoglobin of 7. So that freed up some time, not to mention sleep, and we're better able to provide the care that we need to provide. But one thing I really want to get across to you guys is we found the time that our acuity level and the limited care units changed. Working the hemodialysis floor, you know what it's like to have that patient come in from the hospital with 3 or 4 pages of hospital orders, and their hemoglobin's low, they feel horrible, they're vomiting, everything's awful. You know how many times, and I don't work where you work, but the physician has to be called and asked about something, or the physician has to be brought in to see the patient, to see if they need to go back to the hospital. We found that treating these patients in the pre-dialysis setting, they didn't go to the hospital. It was a joy to see a patient that you've been seeing, even, like you said, for as brief as 4 months, and see that patient walk into the dialysis unit the first day, have an access in their arm, and I'm not saying everybody did because they didn't, but you know, possibly an access that you could at least get one needle in, and their anemia being target, and they're feeling okay, so they're laughing and joking around, and you know, they're feeling better. I'm not saying everybody, because we all know it's a big life adjustment, but there was definitely a difference in that patient who came from the CKD clinic versus the one that came from the hospital. What does that mean for you? It's a lot easier patient to take care of day in, day out, you know. So that's just one thing I wanted to get across to you, and why we really want to talk to you guys about this, so that when you go home, if you're a nephrologist or not already doing this, you can say, you know, if you do this, it's going to make both of our lives easier, not to mention the most important thing, better for the patient. And that was the other question I was going to ask. I'm trying to keep everybody awake. How many of you know that your nephrologist have an active pre-dialysis CKD clinic and treat anemia in that clinic? Okay. I'm bad at numbers. Maybe half, maybe a little bit more. So that's something for you to understand a little bit better what they're trying to do, and if they don't, to go back and have, you know, ask them, why not? So the real world obstacles. When we began using the IV iron, we began the infusions in the outpatient hospital setting. And to be honest with you, we ran across a lot of challenges with that. Patient compliance and convenience is an issue. Patients would go to the outpatient center, and while receiving the actual iron did not take long, they would be forced to sit in the waiting room 3-4 hours. And they were frustrated. You know, they're already coming to see us one day here and there. We've got them going for a vein mapping, and we've got them going here. And then we send them to the hospital to sit for 3-4 hours to get iron. So that was an issue. Educating the pharmacists at the hospital and the outpatient staff on the importance of this, why we were doing this, and how it was going to be done, and that it was safe, and that we could do it, was an obstacle. Patient tracking, non-compliance. You know, they go one time and have to sit for 3 hours, they're not going to want to go again. And then they come back to you in a month or so, and you think they have been, then they come back and they missed all those appointments. And so we had to develop a process of, you know, catching those patients who were falling through the cracks. And you all know what that's like. It's everywhere. The office, even before we brought the IV iron into the office, staffing was an issue. As I talked about, we had to bring on a little bit more staff and schedule better for that. Physician and nurse practitioner availability. When we did bring the IV iron to be given in the office, we wanted a physician and nurse practitioner in the office when they're getting it. And actually, it was required. That for us, it was a comfort measure. It gave us the opportunity to build the relationship with the patient. And a lot of times, we killed two birds with one stone. They would be there for their office visit, and then we get the iron at the same time. So that was still an obstacle because you had to work that schedule out. Because you're still making the hemo rounds and the hospital rounds and the peritoneal dialysis rounds. Venous access, we have a wonderful RN and she can almost tip a vein from here to that wall. But there's always those patients, you know, that you have a problem with. Emergency measures, which was not a big thing, but, you know, we did take on some emergency measures just in case there was a very rare incident that somebody had a reaction. So the availability of IV iron therapy. Now that we had the IV iron therapy available to us in the CKD clinic, we had to look at what was out there. And you're probably familiar with all these, having worked in hemo. Over to the right, you have the iron dextran. It is only approved in the CKD clinic for those who fail on oral iron. But as most of you know, we pretty much left that behind due to some reactions that have been seen. Ferric gluconate, 125 milligrams over 10 minutes in the hemodialysis CKD versus the iron sucrose, which is 200 milligrams over the 2-5 minute push. It doesn't take long, and it is approved in the non-dialysis dependent CKD patient. So let's talk about that a little bit in the protocol development. I'm going to be honest with you, this protocol development is kind of uncharted waters. And so there wasn't, especially when we began this, a whole lot of evidence. We could call somebody up and say, hey, send us your protocol on IV iron in the pre-dialysis population. And I'm not sure that there's many places you can still call, because we made a few calls before we came here just to see what everybody else was doing. So it was a work in progress. What we looked at was our previous experience, our experience in the hemodialysis unit and the needs. Now the need of the CKD population for the iron is much less than that of the hemo, and we had to take that into account. But we also, our experience on poor anemia treatment response, the compliance issues that we talked about that led to poor response. And then we looked at the patient's needs. What did they need? What would be most convenient for them so that they could be compliant? What did they need based on their level of iron deficiency, monitoring their TSAT to ferritin, and how well they would respond to that therapy? And then the safety and efficacy, which, go ahead and move over to that. Dr. Reed showed you the slide earlier showing that with a 200 milligram iron sucrose 2-5 minute push, there were no serious ADEs. Well, the 500 milligram dose, our experience is really limited. Diluted in 250 cc's, given over 3.5-4 hours, hypotension, excuse me, occurred in only 2 of 30 patients, but really our experience with this is limited, and the main that we look at is that there's no ADEs with a 200 milligram 2 to 5 minute push. A study was done by McDougall in which he administered 2,297 injections to 657 patients. As far as what adverse effects he saw, a metallic taste was reported in 412 of those 657 injections, and that's not surprising. We all know hemodialysis patient, we push the iron in and they're like, what are you doing to me? What is that? I can taste it. It was the same, but what was interesting was that upon second injection, 97.5% reported an uneventful first injection without reactions or side effects. So they forgot about it. It was not significant to them. Also, in that study, 57 patients, 2.5% of total patients, had an adverse event other than the metallic taste. 7 did experience an anaphylactoid reaction, 7 out of 657. However, those that were rechallenged with 200 milligrams IV as a 2-hour infusion, there were no adverse events reported. And then the other adverse events were pain during or after injection, nausea, lightheadedness, those types of complaints. But what was also interesting that they looked at with this day is a time and cost. And I think the world these days, we run a lot on how's the money going to be affected and how's the time going to be affected. There was a cost savings of over $5,000 for a 2-minute push versus a 2-hour infusion. Time-wise, the 2-minute push, pretty much a 5-minute thing where you're drawing up the medicine, you're injecting the medicine, prep and everything. 2-hour infusion, you have 135 minutes. And so, pretty significant difference in time frame there for your day-in, day-out activities. The other thing that we looked at when we were looking at protocol development, and since then, was the Silverberg study that Dr. Reed talked about. He looked at IV iron alone or in combination with low-dose EPO. And the target hematocrit of 35% was reached and maintained with iron and low-dose EPO in 2/3 of the patients. What was interesting is that the target hematocrit of 35% was reached and maintained with iron alone in 1/3 of the patients. So 1/3 of the patients simply got iron without the EPO and still met target. And this has been further supported by a study that was just published this year in the Nephrology Dialysis Transplant Journal. And they did a study, monthly IV iron, no EPO, saw how it affected the anemia and iron stores in the pre-dialysis population. And as you can see, there was improvement in anemia and iron stores across the board with a 200 milligram per month, 12 months, no EPO. Ferritin worked its way up, hemoglobin and the TSAT all began to improve. Also, not only did they just improve, but in most and hemoglobin goals in half of these patients, they reached the target. They had a success rate of achieving the target. The hemoglobin greater than 11, ferritin greater than 100, TSAT greater than 20%. So they didn't just improve, but half actually began to meet the targets with iron alone. So this is our protocol, and I'm not gonna walk through it step by step, simply because the main thing I want you to know about this is that it is still a work in progress. There are still clinical trials and they're building the protocol. But what we see is that once we establish that the patient's iron deficient, we establish how iron deficient they are, we determine how much IV iron we are going to give them over what period of time. We get that patient into target. The patient's feeling better, they're in target, they're eating better. We're really maintaining their iron stores very well. And what we do then is just follow up with a maintenance evaluation of their lab work to see if they needed more iron, you know, so they trickle down, we give them a little bit more. And so at this time, we don't have a specific, okay, at this time you're doing this, you know, we do it based on the patient's need and what we see with each individual patient, because as we know, they're all different. So in conclusion, there's gonna be obstacles that can be overcome. They can be worked through. We've done it in hemodialysis and peritoneal dialysis, and we're still doing it now in the pre-dialysis population. 200 milligrams of iron sucrose as a 2-minute push in the non-dialysis dependent CKD patient is FDA approved, and evidence shows you that it's safe for the patient. IV iron is effective in maintaining the iron stores and achieving the hematocrits in this patient population, and that the protocol development is based on patients' needs as well as the newer evidence which is coming out related to specific efficacy and safety. And the take-home message, as I said, take-home message is for you, especially if you know that you're seeing patients in your hemodialysis units that are not going through CKD clinics, they're not getting their anemia managed. Talk to your nephrologist and just ask them if this is in their plan for the future. Talk to them about what you've heard here. Realize that if they do begin doing this, your job's going to be a lot easier, but what's most important for us and what was most rewarding and still is for us is seeing the benefit for the patient, seeing how much better they feel and how much easier the transition is from going from pre-dialysis to dialysis. And in the long run, these are not my babies. I wish they were. I wish I could claim them. These are his grandbabies. But by doing all this, having the lower acuity level, lower hospitalizations, we have more time and energy to spend with our families as well. So we're going to get to some questions here. I see that they're picking them up. I am truly honored to be here today to talk to each of you because, like I said, I've worked the floor. I know what it's like to be that nurse, and I'm very honored to be here to talk to you today. Thank you.